there, and welcome to episode 12 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. I am pumped up. I'm excited. You want to know why? Because coming up in this episode, we're going to be taking a look at the creepiest parts of the fourth ever Disney film, The Reluctant Dragon. Now, a lot of you right then said, what is that? I've never heard of this before. How is this the fourth film? Well, you're gonna learn all about it real soon. I do want to put up a little disclaimer. While this is a clean podcast, you don't have to worry about that. If you happen to have the show on while maybe some younger children are around, you might want to turn it off and listen to it later, because you might not want to expose them to the harsh realities of 1941 America. And I know you're probably even more confused, but all will be revealed. I just wanted to give you a heads up. This episode, I am joined once again by Derek Bergen from Pardon the Pixie Dust, the touringplans.com blog, and the brand new e-ticket report. So without any further ado, let's begin. It's time once again for the creepiest film. This episode, we're going to be taking a look at the film The Reluctant Dragon. I am joined once again by Derek Bergen from Pardon the Pixie Dust and the brand new e-ticket report.
Howdy, glad to be back.
Yes, you were on the Fantasia episode. Oh. And how was that experience for you?
The worst experience of my life, actually, that I thought was over and gone forever, locked in the vault, as Disney would say. But right. It turns out this movie has references to Fantasia, so I'm glad they opened that Pandora's box.
Right. I mean, you're worse so far until the experience of The Reluctant Dragon, which, you know, before we dip, you know, let's not dip into the commentary quite yet. But You want to talk a little bit about the e-ticket report, a new podcast that your honor just started?
Yeah, the e-ticket report is kind of part of the Mice Chat family of podcasts, and it focuses with me, Chris Wakefield, and Tim Grassi, formerly of the WW Fanboys podcast. He was the old host of that show before Jonathan Hopkins took over, and it's sort of an informal discussion panel, if you will, about Walt Disney World, Universal mostly, and we head over to Disneyland and theme parks in general. So if you like three guys talking theme parks, that's the show for you. So it's an e-ticket report. And if you know what the e-ticket means, you probably would like listening to the show.
Who doesn't know what the e-ticket means?
I get it all the time. And I'm unfortunately, and I'm part of the wrestling world too, I use phrases from this industry, in the theme park industry and the wrestling industry, and people from other worlds who don't follow either one of them have no idea what I'm talking about. So when I mention things like e-ticket, or you say the word kayfabe for wrestling fans, and it's like, and when you're in that community, everyone knows what you're talking about. Like rope drop, there's one, rope drop.
Rope drop,
or if you use rope drop with your friends at work, like, what are you talking about? You mean you get there when it opens? Yeah, that's what you mean. it's weird when you use phrases from this community, like it's, you know, your normal vernacular, and then you step to people outside of that bubble, and they just look at you like you're from Mars, or that episode of the Twilight Zone where he woke up and every person was speaking a different language, so... It's interesting. Right. So don't assume everyone knows what e-ticket if you start talking to your friends and family, because they'll probably think you are a e-ticket bozo. That's my experience.
Oh, jeez. I don't want that to happen. It's the last thing that I want to happen.
Exactly.
Well, The Reluctant Dragon.
Ugh.
Let's get into that and see. Then we'll see what kind of ticket we rate that at the end of the episode.
Oh, my God.
So,
do you think there's any false advertising to begin with? Because when you look at all the box art or movie posters for The Reluctant Dragon, it seems like it's an animated classic.
Yes, this film is completely deceptive. 100%. So let's look at the... I'm going to read the synopsis on IMDb. It says, humorist, and that should be in quotes, Robert Benchley.
Alleged. Yes. Taken away from that.
Yes. Robert Benchley, who I have no idea who that is. Maybe he was famous when this film was released in 1941. Learns about the animation process at the Walt Disney Studios while trying to find the great man himself. Wow, this is really... Who wrote this synopsis? To pitch the idea of making a cartoon about a shy dragon.
Jello.
Right. Pitch a cartoon about making a... I can't even read this. To pitch him the idea of making a cartoon about a shy dragon. So as you said, you look at the cover art. It's a drawing of a dragon. It's called The Reluctant Dragon. So one would believe that you are about to watch an animated feature about a dragon. Correct? Is that what you thought when you started watching it?
That's what I thought. And then at the beginning, before the film starts, I mean, back in the older films, you're given tons of title cards and they always put all the credits at the beginning.
Yeah.
This one had a quote that said, "This picture is made to answer the many requests to show the backstage life of animated cartoons." I mean, I knew I was in trouble at that point. I mean, who has that question anyway? I mean, people, even when you're at a theme park, one of the weird things all theme parks have are caricature artists, and they're popular. So I shouldn't say it's weird, but it's strange that caricature artists are so popular. But even when you're sitting there, it takes forever and you're bored out of your mind, and that's somebody drawing a picture of you. Who wants to watch people draw pictures of other things? It's just mind-numbing that they would make a movie out of this. So I knew just watching that one, that I seen that first sentence, that we're going to be in for a long ride right here, because I don't think anybody wants to know the backstage life of an animated cartoon. Oh, this was not Who Framed Roger Rabbit by any sense. Oh, my gosh.
So basically, this guy has an idea for a movie. So he goes to Walt Disney Studios and tries to find Walt Disney to pitch it to him. But along the way, he goes to all the different departments of animation production, and everyone so graciously shows him each step along the way. And this is definitely, you know, a bait and switch move, because keep in mind, this is the fourth Disney film released in 1941. We've got Snow White, Pinocchio, Fantasia, and then the follow-up is The Reluctant Dragon. People think they're going to see an animated film, and they get this. It's as though they followed up Tangled, and Frozen was just a look on how they produced Tangled. Like, people, a bunch of people at computers with, like, Jack Black, like, breaking in. It's like, I got an idea for a movie. It's called Frozen. And he goes
There's a good documentary that kind of got released, or actually, I don't even know if it was officially released. I know it just started showing up, called The Sweatbox.
Oh, I've heard of that.
It was kind of a behind-the-scenes feature of, I believe, what led to the film. What was the one with the guy and the goat, and David Spade was the...
It's Hercules, isn't it?
The Mayan god one, whatever. I can't even remember.
Emperor's New Groove?
But it was a really good documentary on that film in the 90s. And most people would never want to watch it. Only people like us who are really into Disney animated films or the process would even possibly think of considering watching this. This would be like if they took that film and put it in between Tangled and Frozen at the movie theaters, and like a real film. I mean, it just would have absolutely bombed. And I would love to know how this was received, because look what you just said. That's three pretty big, high-profile films that were probably massive successes at the time. And critically, probably loved. I don't know how people could love Fantasia, but I'm sure people did at the time. And then you get this, which is a 180 different, 180 degrees difference from those. Just, it would have been shocking, I would think.
Yeah, the only thing I read about the response is basically what we said, that the audience were put off by the fact that it wasn't animated, and it cost $600,000 to produce and only returned.
What? Non-adjusted for inflation?
Non-adjusted.
Oh my, that's what a $20 million film now?
Yeah.
Oh my, wow, this is probably when Roy Disney took over. Like, what is going on here? It just blew my mind.
Yeah, but it only brought back in $400,000 at the box office, so...
That might have been Walt buying out screenings like the churches for the Passion of...
Right, right.
Walt's like, Roy's like, where'd all this money go? Oh, don't worry, it's research and development. Just Walt buying out screenings. Oh my gosh. Who is, maybe we can kind of skip for the audience. Who do you think this movie's for? Because if you're a kid going in, it is probably the most boring movie you would ever see in your life. And if you're an adult, it's written like you're a five-year-old, like you're watching some Pokemon cartoon. Who is the audience for? I mean, touched individuals, people dropped on their heads. What did you think? I mean, during the first scene, I'm like, this is like a sitcom from the 50s or 60s that's so unrealistic take on how humans act. Right. And I just can't believe this is a movie theater. And I'm picturing a person bringing their kids. Their kids are going to be stone cold bored. And the parent is going to be insulted because adults don't act like that. Who do you think the demographic was for? What? You, get
I have no comment on that one because just exact for the reason you just said.
Well, let's go to the first scene. I mean, describe what's going on here.
All right. First scene is this humorist, whatever his name was, Robert. Oh. He's sitting in his pool and he's hanging out, and his wife, I don't remember exactly what happens there, but how it starts. But basically, his wife is reading a book or wrote a book called The Reluctant Dragon or something, and shows it to him. Is that what happens? And then
why? And picture this. I thought she was his mother at first. I had to go to IMDb, and they were like 2 years apart. It's crazy. But they're a husband and wife. But she could play Barbara Bush. I mean, she's that age group.
Right.
She's reading this children's book to him. He's in the pool playing with a kid's gun, shooting, you know, back in the, when we were very young, guns would kind of shoot out, people call plungers now for like toilets, you know, little sticks with rubber ends on them
that allegedly
stick to things. I don't think ever did.
Nope.
But he's playing with that in a pool, and it's she goes, you need to make a movie out of this. And it just didn't make any sense why this older woman would be reading this children's book to an older man who's behaving like a five-year-old in a pool. It was just, I didn't understand what was going on right at that point.
So I guess this guy's famous, you know, I guess that's kind of thing. Like, oh, you should make a movie about it because you're a celebrity or something. So I guess that's the only sense to make of
you're
it.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
You should go pitch a movie. Oh, my God.
So from there, they're like, all right, you know, we should pitch it to Walt Disney. So then they drive to Walt Disney Studios, you know, uninvited, show up at the gate, and they're about to go in, and he says to the wife, well, let's go. And she's like, well, I'm not going. So the person that has this book that wanted it pitched... That drove there.
That was perfect. Hold on. This whole conversation goes. They pull in. They were just going to go in. The guard chases them down to say, you can't just go in. Mm-hmm. Finds out what they're there for. And he goes, okay, I'll go find out. So the husband gets out of the car. And she's like, okay, I'm leaving. Like, you didn't even know if he could get in. As far as she knew, this character's mind, she was leaving him at the front gates of Walt Disney World and then leaving for a day. And it was just bananas. Toodaloo.
Yep. Good luck pitching my movie.
Yeah, make my movie. I get credit, producer credit. Oh my gosh.
So he does he sneak in?
No, the guard came back and said, "Walt Disney will see you," and then just pointed the direction where he would go, and so he just starts walking through. This was pretty neat. The Walt Disney World campus, which their Hollywood Studios campus, more where the movies are made. Mm-hmm. And what's more striking now, just seeing it from a 2014 perspective, you know, is how white the place was. I mean, Elsa's snow castle wasn't as white as here. There was no such thing as diversity in this film. And in fact, the one area where they do throw a little diversity is actually pretty insulting. But
spoiler
that's
alert.
What was kind of shocking is watching him walk around this gigantic college campus movie studio, and every single person was taken out of a, you know, Hitler Youth movie.
Yeah, they all look kind of like clones of each other too. If you really think about it,
Stepford husbands actually, because the women again, they're pretty much de-emphasized. Yeah, we could talk about that later on. But the minority in this group was a guy not wearing a hat. I mean, that's the minority in this film.
Mm-hmm. So, he walks along and he stumbles upon the first lesson we learned, which is a life drawing class, where animators learn to do characters of people by observing the real thing. And he walks in there, and he's sneaking around.
Oh, hold on. You skipped it already. One of the creepiest parts of the entire movie.
I did. Okay.
We spent the first 5 minutes of this movie that he's a happily married man with his old wife. They've probably been together forever. 5 minutes on this campus, he sees a young woman in a bathrobe, and he sneaks after her and goes to a window and starts peeping in. It was just, you just established this guy's married. Why would he be leering like this? And he's the baby face of your film. It was bananas.
Oh, so that's why he follows her in there, because is she going to model in the room?
Yeah, he thought she was going to take off her clothes, and he was, a red-blooded American who's going to cheat on his wife, I guess, who just left him for the day to go shopping. It was absolutely nuts.
Yeah, it's funny because I've seen this now twice, because the first time I watched this was a few months ago, and then I wanted to refresh my memory. And I will admit, it is really hard to keep your undivided attention on this movie. So, there's little things that fall through the cracks.
I was just shocked. And again, I'm looking at it from a perspective where I guess you think about what the audience is. Mm-hmm. You just spent your whole movie creating this, that he's in a relationship. They were kind of having bickering in the car. I mean, you're tying in that these two are married for a long time and get together. And the first thing he does when she's gone is go after a young woman. It was just completely bonkers.
So he tries to follow her into this room, and he's just kind of just creeping there in the background. And then,
and she's gone. We never see her again.
Yeah, that was the bait. Yeah, you're right. That was the bait to get in the room. And he clumsily falls, and a full-bodied skeleton falls on top of him. Which I had to give that a creepy point, because I was like, why did a skeleton fall on this guy? And you know that it was probably a real skeleton. I'm sure it wasn't a prop.
He was one of the communists that Walt Disney sold out, and he's keeping his body.
Right.
Or testing for future Walt Disney cryogenic projects, who knows. But yeah, the skeleton which he was holding somehow ended up on top of him in a comedic pratfall.
Right, so attention is brought to him, and then it's like, oh, well, here, let me show you how things happen.
The professor knew who he was. From this point on in the movie, every single person he runs into knows who he is, despite the only person he's given his name to was the guard at the front gate. And this was before cell phones. This was before computers.
Right.
But every single person he ran into knew exactly who he was and what he was there for instantly.
Right. So that's why they're ready to give him all these lessons of everything, how to do it. So what did you think of this scene? Any thoughts on
this? This was just unbelievable. Because it turns out, and this, I guess it was supposed to be a little funny at first, because you're meant to believe that this class is drawing a nude model. But it turned out they were drawing an elephant. And here's where we went to the first really racist part of the movie. They go to an Asian girl who's drawing, who her name is Lotus. Go figure that. Her elephant that she's drawing is also racist. All the other ones are drawing is like a cartoon elephant, big eyes, very expressionistic. Mm-hmm. In fact, the teacher even shows you how to make them more bigger eyes, bigger smiles, make everything bigger than life. So they go to this Asian girl who's drawing, and her elephant has slanted eyes, a stereotype Chinese person would draw. It was just next level bananas in how overt racist Disney was at that time. I wrote down, this is insane in my notes, because they just went over, here's how you should draw cartoons, or the Asian person, and even the Asian elephant has slanted eyes. And it was just so crazy. And then the teacher, or I shouldn't say the teacher, the humorist looks at the elephant, and it was semi-funny. He really starts insulting the elephant on how dumb they are and how stupid,
right,
how ugly they are. And in my notes, I wrote, I can't believe they're really insulting this elephant. This must have been near when Dumbo came out, and we were talking off air. That's their next film.
Yeah.
I mean, if you knew your next film was setting up a really cute, smart, everyone wants to associate with elephants, why would you spend so much part of your time making them look like the dumbest creatures on earth in this film? It was really strange from a production standpoint. I mean, they really treated this elephant bad.
Yeah, that's true. the elephant got back at him, right? Or what happens?
There's 5 minutes of insulting to set up one little one person was drawing the elephant with this guy's face on it. I mean, it was all to set up a really dumb joke, but they never reverse the opinion that elephants are dumb animals. Look how stupid they look. You know, they have tails on both ends. It was just, it was really cruel to the point. And I just, it didn't make sense when you knew, they must have knew at this point, Dumbo is almost at production and everybody loves Dumbo. I mean, it's a very cute elephant. And in the real world, everyone knows elephants are pretty smart individuals. So just a very awkward experience for me watching it.
Right. They're actually making Dumbo in this film. There's scenes from Dumbo later on in this film. So they are literally making it while they're making this film.
People, I actually think people need to see this movie to see it. They probably think this is unbelievable for saying this. It's all happened. We're 10 minutes in.
Right. And all this happened. And before, I just want to bring this up now as things get more unbelievable and insensitive and racist. I'm shocked that this is still available to watch.
This, oh, wow, it is. I thought this was burned in the vault.
No, this is available on Netflix streaming. You can't watch Song of the South. That's buried. You know, but this, and with the same thing, the same cover with the playful dragon on the cover, like you search Netflix for Disney movies, it's one of the ones that comes up. So any child could stumble across the reluctant dragon right now in 2014. I mean, they would turn it off immediately, like you said.
Yeah, maybe that's in Fantasia too. Maybe that's the reason people don't get to the offensive or ridiculous parts of these movies, because they're just like so bored within the first 5 minutes. They don't get to it, because I can't see how a parent could watch this with their kid. We're going to get to some stuff. This is kind of outrageous. And I just can't believe they wouldn't object to this almost similarly to Song of the South, maybe just because Song of the South has that super racial stereotype with African-Americans and slavery. But this has some really strong overtones in it.
No, definitely. So I think we're good with this room, yep. Right?
Yeah. Oh, let's get out of
let's
this
Let's move
room.
On
oh
to the gosh. Next room where he walks in on a film score being recorded featuring Clarence Dash, the voice of Donald Duck, and Florence Gill, the voice of Clara Cluck. It starts off with, you just see this woman, there's an orchestra playing, this woman starts singing opera with chicken noises.
And the guy next to him, he keeps trying to have a conversation with, every time he's about to talk, he starts spraying stuff into his mouth. It was just so strange. Maybe they did that back then. Maybe that was just something that happened that died over time. But it was very, picture it today, if you're having two people sitting directly next to each other, sort of having a conversation, and one, instead of talking, just starts spraying stuff into his mouth. What? I don't get it.
Yeah, that was strange. But was
it must have been something in the 40s that just disappeared.
Yeah,
from
everyone
human
was
behavior.
Just keeping themselves moist. In the-
So maybe Dallas Buyers Club has a scene like that. I don't know. I must have missed it.
It was even stranger. I was like, moving on. It was even stranger. Was is seeing the voice of Donald Duck like coming out of a man's mouth? Like this is 1941. Yeah. Like this, we don't need to pull the curtain. We want to believe that these characters are real. I don't want to see some weird guy with Donald Duck's voice coming out of his mouth.
Well, I thought the lip syncing was so bad that Clarence Nash. I had to go check to IMDb because I was like, well, why wouldn't they just have the guy that does Donald Duck do this? That was the guy that did Donald Duck, yeah, but instead of having him do it, they ADR'd the sound of the chicken and Donald Duck, so they were trying to lip sync it. And to me, it didn't come close to matching up. So I didn't even think that was him. It turns out it was him. You didn't mention her, so you have this old woman who's probably about 70 years old or whatever. She's in Hollywood. I mean, it's completely sunny. They're inside, and she's wearing this full-length fur coat. She looks like Sweetums from the Muppet movie. I mean, it's so ridiculously big, and you're in California inside. It just made no sense. But what I was more distracted by was it did set up like you. They're setting up this big opera, and she starts singing clucking noises, and then you have the Donald Duck thing. But I was taken out because I thought the ADR lines were just so not matching up to the actual voices or mouths.
Actually, I didn't notice that. Like I said, I wasn't undividedly watching this.
Yeah.
so I didn't notice how close it was or that it wasn't close at all.
Yeah, horrible.
It is strange. I don't know. I guess, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, we're trying to apply logic to this film.
Exactly.
There's no point in doing that. So that's about all I got for this room. You ready to move
run
on?
Out of here.
Let's
run
go
out
to the next one. Now it's time for a Foley session for a cartoon featuring the Casey Jr. segment from Dumbo. And Foley is, of course, how they do sound effects for movies and cartoons. And yeah, there's some strange things happening in this room. For sure.
Pardon me, Mr. Bensley. This is your score, Doris. I've got all the cues marked in, I think. You come in right after the fourth beat there, okay?
Okay, Frank.
Let's give it a lot of personality now.
All right, ready, everybody.
Casey Jr. I used to know his old man.
All right, boys, let's go for a rehearsal. Lights. Picture.
Let's go. One, two, three, four.
All aboard. All aboard.
First, we have the woman who's talking to our humorist and says how she explains how they make trained talk, where she puts up some vocoder to her throat and starts talking. That was pretty creepy to see.
Creepy. She didn't sound like a train. She sounded like one of those anti-smoking commercials where the person has lung cancer and they're trying to scare the crap out of you. That's what she sounded like. And they're trying to say she sounded like a train. I'm like, that's no train. That's a person on their last legs on Earth.
Right, yeah, no.
You know, whatever. I don't even know what they call them. What you put up to your neck to speak once you've had throat cancer. But it was, like, very creepy and not how I picture my trains talking.
Yeah.
There's no Hogwarts Express.
If trains sounded like that, I, you know, would avoid train stations at all costs. So they start doing the Casey Jr. segment, which is you know, the beginning of it, it's nice and pleasant, you know, and just basic train noises. Then all of a sudden, a storm comes. And so they show people simulating what a storm sounds like. And I actually had to rewind this because this one part I'm about to say, because I'm like, I didn't just see what I just thought I saw. That wasn't real. I don't know. So to simulate the sound of thunder, they had these three guys banging these two, I don't know, maybe trash can lids or something together. But for some reason, these three guys had burlap sacks over their heads while they were doing it.
I wrote it was like they were to tell people it was like the lynching scene from Django Unchained. Picture three guys for some reason dressed like that in this Foley department. Plus, I didn't mention to you, there's people smoking throughout this movie.
Oh, of course.
Why would you be smoking on a set like this where there's... Oh, my gosh. It's just absolutely crazy.
So, yeah, I don't know the practical use of burlap sacks in recording sounds.
That was weird. I'm glad you caught that. I thought it was really strange myself. I think another person was wearing, like, a gas mask. It was just a really strange day at the Walt Disney Studios.
That probably is one of the, like, for creeping me out, that was probably the creepiest part of the movie, just that few seconds this guy's wearing.
Because it's like split seconds, like you said, you need to go back. You're almost like, did I see that? Like, it was like a subliminal advertising out of nowhere. And then you go back, and if you pause it, you're like, that's some screwed up stuff right there. But it's not overt. You know, it doesn't hit you over the head with it. It's just a blink and you miss it. But if you go back, you're like, what is going on?
So, yeah, that was pretty creepy. And then just the scene itself, you know, it just got pretty, you know. Of course, every time it rains and it thunders, it's like, you know, death is upon the world, you know. Like, so, you know, I gave that a creepy point just for the whole scene.
Yeah, super creepy. Yeah, you know? Bonus creepy point. She sounded like a person with lung cancer, and then you have this lynching party going on. That was the creepiest room in the studio by far.
Yeah, so be careful.
I would have ran screaming. I'd be like, I don't care my royalties are. I'm out of here.
Did you also notice that room was dark? All the other rooms were very well lit. This room, for some reason, was dark. Again, you're recording sound. So there's no reason for the room to be dark.
You would think it would help them to see what they were doing.
Right.
Who knows? Who knew?
All right. So let's go on to the next room, which the camera room.
Yeah, this was a good one, actually.
Yeah, so this shows how they do multi-plane camera tricks of animation. Nothing was really creepy in here. And I can't really explain it. You just kind of have to look at it.
It's pretty fascinating to see how they had to do films back then. And I think Walt Disney himself, or the Disney company, was the originator of this, where to show depth in cartoons, they literally had like seven gigantic, huge planes of what it might have been glass. I don't know what it was. But these seven huge things, all with parts of the animated drawn on it, put all lined up in a row. And the camera is at the very top looking down. I mean, it's just, I thought that was amazing. I'd like to see a documentary just on that, on how animators had to work on just drawing part of the background on one piece, drawing the other part of the next piece, and then lining them all up. So when the camera goes through them, you see like what we have 3D now. It was basically creating 3D. So the audience sees a depth in what they're looking at back in 1941. I mean, this was right. Way ahead of their time. And I was really blown away at seeing this process.
Yeah, I've seen something about this on another bonus feature. It's probably a Pinocchio one. I don't remember. And the cool part about it is that they zoom in the camera, and then they'll move the planes around. I don't remember if they showed it in this or not. So that's how they actually achieve that. Like, you're going through, you know, flat drawings. You know,
it's great. Yeah, I mean, when you consider how it was done, and just it's actually amazing, really.
So yeah, not too creepy, but fun, educational. Yep. So, also during this scene, we didn't mention this before. Up until this point, the film's in black and white, and then it just randomly turns into color.
That was pretty strange. It was because it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it says there's a comment that says Technicolor. So I guess that was you know.
Yeah, well, they walked into what they call the rainbow room. This is where all the girls worked. At this point, other than that one girl who was clearly didn't work in the sound department, but she was a pretty face.
Right.
Every serious person working on an animated studio is a man. So you get to this room where they all just do colors, and I guess only girls can do colors because literally every person that worked in this department was a woman. This is where they mixed different colors. This is where they figured out how to get them on the animation cells. But every person in this rainbow room was a woman, and we learned about the process of paints.
Which, you know, that was all right, I guess. It got a little boring, but...
Here's my note. I wrote, this was in a movie theater? I mean, can you picture an audience watching this? This is worse than any educational film. This is the Walt Disney making this. It's just boring. It's not interesting at all. It's the opposite of hashtag story. It's mind-numbing banality. And what if you had a 4-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 13-year-old? How would they not be running up and down the aisles by this point screaming? I mean, it was just so boring. Maybe interesting on some technical things for people like you and me, the multi-planed camera, or just seeing how to create sounds, you don't take from the real world. You create your own stuff in that Foley department. I mean, it's really neat process of behind the scenes, but it's boring as hell. Oh, yeah, I'm glad I'm not the only one. It looks like you and me at the same point. We're like, this is the most boring movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, just that's the part where you really start looking at your watch, going like, "How far into this am I? What's going on here?" See, I don't have any other really another points about this. They show how they make working on Bambi during this part too. So that's another interesting tidbit. Well, let's go on to the next room. Let's just get there.
We're not. What room is it? Hold on. I don't think we're done with this room yet. Have you gotten past the figurines yet?
No, that's where we're going. We're going to the figurine room.
Oh, my Lord.
The maquette? I don't know how to pronounce that word. The maquette, whatever, making department, which is they make small statues to help the animators envision a character from all sides. And so they have a few on display there. They have... What does that say? Someone from Lady and the Tramp. There's Captain Hook and Tinkerbell in there. And
they had a lot. There was a ton of them.
And there is there's a character there that I mentioned to you when we did Fantasia. I brought up to you that was cut from the re-release of Fantasia, which is a black centaurette from...
Topless. And they make a point of showing that. It's literally out of nowhere. And again, maybe it's looking at it from a 2014 perspective, or maybe just here in America too, where we've kind of been told nudity and whatever, it's bad. But here's a Walt Disney animated cartoon. You've just been shown Bambi, you're shown all these cartoon figures, and the one they focus on is this nude black stereotype racist centaur figure. It's absolutely crazy. And he was leering at it. I mean, this guy was holding it like it was, he walked into an adult toy sex shop. You know, even like the number one item. Did you think that it was a sexy piece?
Did I find it sexy? No, I didn't.
I didn't think so either at first, but Maya said otherwise. So. I was all in with him. Me and him were on the same page on that one.
Well, he steals it actually too. On top of that, so
yeah, we'll get to that afterwards.
Right.
Oh, and he okay. This is great. It leads to a line. He wanted to know if they were for sale, and then they're not for sale. And he goes, "If they aren't for sale, what are they for? Or am I too young to know? I mean, what could that line mean other than men?" To them, I mean, it was just so strange. That line can't work in any other context than it's a man this toy, and it was just so bizarre. Oh, I loved it. It's the greatest movie I ever saw at this point. I couldn't believe I'm watching it.
So that brought you back in, huh?
I'm 100% in this film. Absolutely unbelievable. How many people watched this movie before it was put out, and they all said, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so with you, so many different hands. And to the fact, the point I'll bring up again, this is available for streaming right now on Netflix, rated G, mixed in with all the other children's Disney films. Like,
oh my god, so many. I need to screen cap this part.
Yeah, so many hands and eyes have went through this. I'm like, oh, that's good. Yeah, that'll work.
I don't think they make it. I think maybe the people who've made the movie stopped tempting them. Like, okay, whatever, put it out.
I don't have any other things on this one. Are you ready?
Oh, that gets 10 creepy points and a Hall of Fame award right there. A reference to in a Disney film. Love it.
Well, our next one is quite a special room.
Disturbing.
This is the storyboard development room, where they show that they're working on a short called Baby Weems. The story is shown to the audience in a form of an animatic, which means it's not fully animated. It's mostly just still drawings and there's some moving around, but all the voices seem to be in place. And I will say this, up until point, that this story was actually interesting to me. I actually thought it was quite good. It's a story of at 2 weeks old, a baby became really smart and was speaking, you know, like a adult, and became world famous because of this character. And so I was like, oh, this is actually amusing and funny, you know, or I don't know, funny, but whatever, amusing. I'll give it amusing.
Yeah, amusing. what wasn't amusing is before they got to that point, you walk into this room, this story conference room, you have the paper on the walls, papers everywhere, writers everywhere. They're all smoking. And in the middle of all this is a baby, a literal baby.
Right, yes.
One of these writers is artists is sketching out too as well. And it's just, again, this is from 2014. Maybe in 1940, they didn't realize that maybe a baby shouldn't be in a closed room full of cigarette smoke. But also, maybe people shouldn't be smoking in a room that is literally filled top to bottom with paper. I mean, it was just kind of weird seeing that. But it led to this, like you said, it was an enjoyable, you know, storyboard thing. You'll see very similar things on bonus features of the newer Blu-rays. Like, I just got my Frozen Blu-ray, and it says deleted scenes on it. I'm sure it's just going to be something like this, where they say, here is a scene we thought we were going to put in. You'll have a director talking over it, and you'll just see the storyboards for it.
Right. So it was amusing. And then,
yeah.
And then we reached the point where they're trying to portray that the news of this magnificent smart baby has hit the world. And they just show these shots of people receiving the news from all over the world in foreign countries. That was really, I don't know if shocking is the right word to say, but just really caught me off guard. I'll say that. Just the racist portrayals of, is it has to be, besides the stuff that was cut from Fantasia, the most racist things that have ever been in any Disney film. It has to be. Like, I can't imagine anything that's more racist than these.
Yeah, you saw the screenshot I put on Twitter. I couldn't believe what I was seeing with my eyes. I mean, it starts off innocuous enough where, of course, people in Africa get their news from bongos and stuff like that rather right. than actual news. Semi-humorous. I think they even did that on the movie Airplane. Had a pretty good sequence where, you know, news stations across the world were reporting something and the African news station was playing bongos and stuff. So it's just, I can see the humor in that. But then they go to the next point with the characters who are just completely racist, big lips, tons of rings around the neck, and it's just like, it's just unbelievable that that's my grandparents' generation. We're not talking hundreds of years ago. Mm. How could anybody believe this? This is my grandfather who grew up seeing this. It's very hard to wrap your head around that.
And what's even crazier, going back to the thing I keep bringing up, you know, they cut out that stuff from Fantasia. Like, it would have been like really simple to cut out these few still frames.
Right. Again, I don't think they made it to this part of the movie. They just gave up. That's the only explanation for all this stuff staying in.
So yeah, that was pretty bizarre. Because when you first see the bongo one, you're like, you get that uneasy feeling. I'm like, all right. I'm like, whatever, you know. And let's just try to ride this out. But then they're like, nope, you're not going to ride this out.
We're going to make you squeam. Yep. I would like to do a documentary myself on watching parents with kids watching this movie and the questions you need to answer afterwards. Oh, Lordy.
And what was the other one, though? There was some type of Asian stereotype, too, right?
All I wrote was a big word, racist, multiple exclamation points under it.
Well, that sums it up. So essentially just rooting the baby Weems short, you know, just couldn't, you know.
Couldn't help themselves.
Yeah.
They were doing too good at first.
So that's about all I got for this room.
Yeah.
So now let's go to the last room. Right? I think this is the last room.
I think there's one before we get to the screen.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
Where they look at the Donald Duck room, basically, or whatever that room was. But we got to see some pretty interesting, they did some mock paintings of where they took Donald Duck, reimagining of famous paintings. Like, instead of Whistler's mother, it was Donald's mother, and it was all ducks. And what's interesting on this is that a couple months ago, every month for the touringplans.com blog, I do the magic, the memories and merch, sorry about that. And I do a monthly photo report at the Disney Outlet store, and they had this weird semi-painting of Daisy Duck, and I'm like, this makes no sense. Who is this for? And it was actually a reimagining of the girl with the golden earring. I think that it's a famous painting.
All right.
And they redid it with Daisy Duck, and it was just so strange. Well, here we are 70 years before this, and there's this whole wall of famous paintings that were reimagined using duck characters. So this has definitely been a theme throughout Disney history. And after he saw that wall, he went over and again met Clarence Nash, and they had a short little Donald Duck cartoon.
Right.
Which was good. I actually liked it. They kind of showed Donald Duck at first being drawn, missing a foot, and then that Donald would interact with the guys off camera. So I thought it was actually pretty neat.
Yeah, and that reminds you, you're like, oh, yeah, like, I like Donald. I like Disney stuff.
Yeah.
Like, because there's so much crap until this point. And then you're like, oh, yeah, that's why I'm watching this again, because Donald's funny. So, yeah, that was fun. I forgot about that little Donald coming to life there during the animation process.
Yep, that was cute. And that was followed immediately by, for some, out of nowhere, just a goofy short, a full beginning to end goofy short. And this makes me think someone did watch the movie and they're like, what is we need something that people want to watch here. And I'm really surprised they didn't put this goofy short more near the beginning of the film, because it really comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And it's the only animated thing we get that's a full story. It's not just a piece of it, you know, in the middle of something. So I think they saw this and they're like, we have to put in something to keep people's attention.
And an interesting note here is that this is the first Goofy cartoon where he shows how to do something, which is like a long series of...
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's very interesting.
Yeah, so... But, yeah, so that was... Yeah, the Goofy show was okay. I think I was... I was definitely fading here at this point. Anyway, we're almost to the end. So now he goes to the next room, which is the screening room where finally, after accidentally walking into all of these rooms, finally finds a room where Walt Disney is. The great man himself, as the synopsis says. And he says,
I was actually surprised. You know, I kind of expected the film where he'd never actually get to Walt Disney. It was, for most of us as Disney fans who have seen tons of Walt Disney stuff from, you know, introducing Epcot or the Disneyland plans and then Walt Disney World, the Florida Project, all that stuff. It was weird seeing him in this more relaxed nature in a movie, almost as a character, even though the character is playing himself. It was a different Walt Disney than the one we're used to seeing.
Yeah, I mean, he was slouched over, kind of like...
It was strange. He was sitting on his seat like a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand it. I'm like, who said that? Or maybe at the point he was like George Lucas and no one could tell him no. But I'm like, what? That's Walt Disney wouldn't do that. Even if the Walt Disney does do that. You know, the Walt Disney we know wouldn't do that. It was weird.
He seemed like he was high too. I don't know.
He watched the movie. They got him drunk first. Like, we got a new movie. We're gonna let you watch it. But hold on, let's have a bit of strength first.
So humorist, which is funny to name him now. Humorist, humorist. You know, oh, he says humorist like, oh, I understand you have a picture you want to pitch to me. He's like, yeah. Well, before that, oh, then someone goes, oh, we're ready for the screening. Well, hold on to that point. Let's watch this screening real quick before
No. Before we got to that, he wanted to tell him what his idea was. So he starts handing Walt Disney all the stuff he accumulated throughout the picture. Like one person sculpt of his head. One person did the drawing of the elephant of him. And he's going through his pockets. And he pulls out that he stole that topless centaur figure from the room that they specifically told him was not for sale. He stole it. Was taking it home, and as we established before, the only reason he take it home to so that was just it was so uncomfortable that they threw that in there out of nowhere. Bananas.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, I breezed over that one.
The only thing just gives it to Walt Disney, like, oh, how'd that get in there? Yeah, I wonder how.
Right.
Yeah, we have a whole division of Walt Disney World to catch people like you, buddy. We all know how it got in there.
Very strange. So, all right. So then he's like, let's watch the screening. And just by chance, the film they are just about to screen is the exact movie he came to pitch, The Reluctant Dragon.
I thought that was a clever end. I mean, it was horrible how to get there. But I thought if this movie did ever work and you had a neat idea of a person going through elaborate lengths to pitch a story, you finally get to pitch the story. And it turns out they already created the film. Yeah. I thought that would have been a pretty interesting ending, so I didn't mind that. I thought that was pretty clever.
That was okay. What was not okay was the short, The Reluctant Dragon, that they showed. Which, this by far, honestly to me, over anything, was the most boring part of the entire film. Like, I could not keep my attention on this. Now, let's say there's been a lot of, you know, intolerance portrayed throughout this film. But the thing I caught right away was this kid's talking about, and I don't remember exactly what happens, but basically there's this dragon that, you know, doesn't want to be a ferocious fighting machine, which to me kind of come off a little effeminate.
A little?
Yeah.
He was sashaying, as we will.
So... the whole point of this story is it's pretty homophobic. I mean, I don't know the way to put it. Like, it's just saying, like, he's not really a dragon because he's acting effeminate. So he's reluctant to be a dragon because only dragons are masculine and strong and fierce. Well, the wrong kind of fierce, but the other kind of fierce.
I think you read into the subtext pretty clearly.
I was like, wow. And I got that from the first 30 seconds of it.
Yeah.
And this thing is, what, 20 minutes long?
Never ending. Never ending. I thought a better movie, a better ending would have been after they filmed this interminably long short. The humorist would have looked at Walt Disney and said, I thought this book would have made a good movie. Turns out I was wrong. Oh, it was horrible. You think the whole movie's leading up to this. This needs to be the showstopper. And it's like, oh my God, bring Donald Duck back. Bring Sonny back. Do something. This is horrible.
Could you imagine if this was the whole movie? Like, if this was a 90-minute film?
Oh, Oh my god!
I don't even know what would have been worse. Yeah, it was horrible, and I could not keep my attention on it. I tried, and I'm just like, I mean, I've been worn down the entire film, and I'm here, and you know, we summed up what the whole thing is about in like a few seconds, and it's 20 minutes long. So that's that, right? So the film ends.
Thankfully,
right? I forget that it goes back to them in the
screen. Another fake car scene, and she berates him again, how he should have been quicker on his feet and stuff like that. And the closing gag of the entire movie was him finally doing the Donald Duck voice of basically being upset at his wife. So, oh my god,
that's how we ended it. So. Any thoughts? Did you like this movie, Derek?
I think people need to see it just because it'll bend your mind. And this is the Disney company that we know of today, where it kind of started from and how much things have changed. And maybe for the right way. I mean, we kind of argue that maybe they're becoming too politically correct, or they, you know, they're cutting out too many things, or being, you know, they're whitewashing history. Maybe they need to, because you watch a movie like this and it's offensive in many ways, whether it's sexual, racist, or homophobic. I mean, they were hitting all the elements. Unless you were an adult white male, you were really insignificant at this time and place in the Disney history. And it's just strange looking back. And I think this is definitely not a movie to watch with your kids. But I think if you're an adult male or single or, you know, above the age of 18, I think it's a fascinating look at the history of movies. And you do get to see some really neat insights into how Walt Disney was putting out revolutionary cartoons at the time, whether it's Fantasia, Snow White, Dumbo. I mean, they were so far ahead of everyone else at the time. And this does give you a small peek at what they were doing then.
Yeah, they could have... You know, they could have, I don't know, made this a half an hour, cut out the humorous adventures.
And I would have think that. the only he's given such a huge part, and I know we lose pop culture, you lose over time, but it was such a big part. I would think he'd have to be the most famous person at the time, and I've never heard of this guy. So maybe it was just somebody that Walt Disney liked. It's unexplainable of why it was all put on his shoulders, and I don't think he was ready for it.
I'll look right just quickly. Robert Benchley. Let's see. Was an American humorist best known for work as a newspaper columnist and a film actor. Blah, blah, blah. I'm already bored. I don't know.
Yeah. Don't bother. He's a friend of a friend, clearly. Yeah. But just think of the context that this was made in between a really hot streaks of creativity and next level cartooning. I mean, Walt Disney, again, they set the bar that people weren't in second place. They were in 20th place. They were that far behind.
Yeah.
And in between all that came this movie. And it's a stark contrast. And it just, I wish we could see a documentary on how this movie got made and what was going on at the time. And this must have been a Walt passion project, because it just doesn't make sense of how it went through and how it went through like it did, unless it was his baby. He loved it. He loved this writer. And they were going to put this through no matter how bad it was.
Right. I do have a little bit of insight on that. This was right before World War II started, when the European markets were about to be cut off from the release of films. And they were making Dumbo and Bambi, and they wanted to get a film out before they were cut off. So this they rushed to make this movie. So that was one of the motivations, I guess.
I feel bad for the people in Europe. They're like, that's their last Disney film. Oh,
right.
Bring on the Germans. We don't need any more of this.
Wow. But I do have some creepy trivia for you, which also gives a little more insight about what's going on here.
Right.
So this film was released during the animation strike of 1941. Are you familiar with this?
They should have went on strike after this movie.
Well, they did it during. So the funny thing is that
That makes a lot more sense. This could be Walt Disney, the jerk that no one wants to think about, and maybe there was a lot of truth in what Meryl Streep said on her rant after Saving Mr. Banks. Mm-hmm. This could have been Walt Disney saying, these animators who made his company, without them, without Snow White, there is no Disney we know of today.
Nope.
All of that, and he's underpaying them and stuff like that, so they go on strike, and he's like, oh yeah, well, I don't need you. I'm going to put out my own movies, and this is what we get.
That's exactly what happened. And... So all the animators in the film are actors.
Really? What?
Yes, because they're on strike. They're not there. They're not going to show, you know, participate in this movie. They were outside picketing.
Wow, that actually is a very neat note.
And another note on that was the strikers would picket the theaters where the film was shown, and they would hold up a large cardboard sign as Walt Disney as a dragon labeled the Reluctant Disney.
Unfortunately, these animators legitimately, should have encouraged people to go see this movie, because this is what a Disney movie would be like without us.
Right,
and
right.
You'd be like rioting for Walt to give them a raise after watching this. You'd be like, wait a second, we need these guys back. So I think they did the opposite. I mean, I know their intentions were good, but really they needed people to see this movie because it's missing something, and what it's missing is the Disney animator's magic.
Right. Well, it's missing a lot more than that. Yeah. But that is one thing it's missing, though.
What it's not missing is racist figurine. That it has.
The other creepy trivia point is that the Reluctant Dragon and Sir Giles, which is one of the characters from Reluctant Dragon, does make a cameo in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, just as the Fantasia characters do, really honing in the time period of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is, I guess, you know, the early 40s, late 30s. So I feel like I might remember seeing this dragon. Maybe I just thought it was, you know, some random character, but the Reluctant Dragon is in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, so
I will definitely look out for that next time. Same with Fantasia. There's probably plenty of people, because I at the time when I watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I never even put two and two together. That movie is so timeless and almost so perfect that you don't consider, well, how come these other characters aren't in it? It's because probably it took place in that time and they wanted to also be historical accurate, which is why you had a lot of older characters. Some of them are favorites, like Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Mickey Mouse. But some of them, like the Reluctant Dragon, that are kind of lost to history. And it'd be cool to watch that movie with someone who knew the era at the time and tell you, well, here's who all these people were and how relevant they were at that time in history. So, I mean, it just makes Who Frames Roger Rabbit even higher, probably, in my esteem, that they went to that type of level of accuracy. That's fantastic.
I mean, you understand Fantasia, but they pulled out the Reluctant Dragon, so they were really dedicated to, yeah. to doing that.
That means they watched all the way through to get to it. Bravo to them. Oh, my God.
No, they just saw the cover. They're like, oh, let's throw that in. They probably didn't even know what the movie was in the movie.
Robert Zemeckis is finally watching it 20 years later. What is this?
We did it. I pulled you. It's funny. You sent me a tweet after you finished watching it, which was a picture of that racist African, and said, "You owe me for this one."
I'm never listening to your advice again on a movie ever.
You led me down
the rabbit hole twice, and I don't know if I can return.
I didn't say it was good. I just said I'm going through all the films, just so I can, you know, I like to have an informed opinion on things. I don't like to just, you know, pretend that I know what's up. I want to say, I've seen The Reluctant Dragon. I can tell you this movie is horrible.
It's a wonder Disney continued to make films afterwards.
Yes, quite strange. So, Derek, if people want to get in touch with you, how are they going to do that?
Well, they can see me at Twitter, at Derek Bergen. Or follow my blogs on the touringplans.com blog.
And, of course, you're on Pardon the Pixie Dust, the podcast, and the E-Ticket Report. And you got it. Are you on any other podcast?
That's more than enough. But I'm sure I can guest on plenty others, like Parkscope, Orlando United, and several others, talking theme parks out of my butt.
Excellent. And I actually got you talking not about theme parks on a podcast, so
I can't wait to go back to the theme park.
Well, you know, the upcoming films get better, so, and then they get worse again.
It can't get worse than this.
I'm not sure. I mean,
that's a challenge for you. If you find a movie worse than this, I will come back and talk about it.
All right. Well, I said there are. As soon as Disney started to get in the live action business, there is just a slew of films that look
once
like
once Herbie misery. Gets introduced, it opened a whole new level of awfulness. Yeah. I could be back for Herbie Goes Bananas with Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, Herbie can't. I mean, there's the whole Shaggy Dog series of films.
My computer insane. Wore tennis shoes. All right, I'm back in.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff they like to sweep under the rug. But I'm lifting the rug out.
We're opening the vault.
Yeah. we're going to go through all this stuff. But anyways, thanks for coming back on. And of course, we'll have you back again. And, you know, we can have you back again and talk about, you know, something that you actually like for a change. So we'll see how that goes. But anyways, thanks for coming on.
Excellent. Have a good day, man.
Thanks to Derek for joining me once again on the show. Links to his post in the Touring Plans blog and links to his two podcasts that he's on, Pardon the Pixie Dust and the E-Ticket Report, can be found in the show notes for this episode on our website. And this, of course, is episode 12. Coming up on the next episode, Stacey J. Oswald from Must Do Disney will be joining me on the show to bring you the creepy must-do Disney list. It's not to be missed. Trust me. It's creepy. If you have any questions or feedback, shoot me an email. It's creepykingdom@gmail.com. Coming up in a future episode, I'm going to be responding to some of the emails I've gotten. I've been getting a healthy amount, and I really appreciate them, so don't hesitate to shoot me an email. That's creepykingdom@gmail.com. Please visit our website, creepykingdom.com, for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pics. Pics. That's slang for pictures. Pics. Links to social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, Pinterest, all right there. I don't need to spout out what each one is. You just go to the website, creepykingdom.com, click on the icons, you can go to your preferred social media page and connect with us there. Also, like to mention, I am looking for co-hosts for this show and also for contributors to the website. If you love creepy Disney stuff and you would like to contribute in some way, you know, send me an email. That email address again. creepykingdom@gmail.com. You can review the show in iTunes. You can do it. I give you permission to, and you can rate us there as well. 5 stars would be even better. You can also subscribe there too. You can just do anything you want in iTunes store. Just search Creepy Kingdom and we'll come up, I promise. And we're also available on the Stitcher app that streams podcasts directly to your phone. Again, search Creepy Kingdom and we'll be right there waiting for you. Like Bryan Adams. Is that creepy? I don't know. Well, until next time,
keep it creepy.
I have a girl now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.
Ha 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 ha